Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the Broth Lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
So Stacey, I was gonna like say hi, Frogsy, or make some kind of like stupid joke about your voice, but in the last few minutes, you seem to be doing this like downward spiral into like really bad sickness. So now I feel like it would be cruel, but I do think you should say hello just so that all of our listeners hear how you sound this week.
Why ever would you be making fun of my voice? Why would that be a thing that you would be compelled to do?
It may just be, it's sort of this sultry, croaky, my kids had this last week and my oldest kept saying, I sound like a croaky granny. Both the kids, I don't think they both had the laryngitis, and it was sort of like mild of every symptom. And I was thinking it must have been like a mild flu, like a flu C or something like that, because it was sort of, they had a low grade fever, they had a mildly sore throat, a mildly runny nose, the laryngitis, a mild cough. They were kind of low energy. Both of them complained about being achy a little bit. Both of them complained about tummy aches a little bit, but there was no like, you know, big horrible thing, but it just seemed to hang on. But both of them thought their voices were hysterical and they were just cracking themselves up just by talking. It was really, really amusing. It was kind of like the flu version of a helium balloon in terms of amusement. Probably arguably safer than a helium balloon.
Well, I do think that that's kind of what we've got going on here. I don't know what the deal is, but the boys were all sick like a week and a half ago, everybody but Cole and I. So, they were all sick and I wasn't, and I was all gloaty and super excited because it's a really, really stressful time at work for me, the end of September, as I've mentioned like a bajillion times. And we've also talked about how stress is a huge contributor to your health or not being healthy. And for as long as I've been in this profession, I can remember always getting really sick this time of year. Usually really sick means like bronchitis.
I remember you getting super sick like right after the government fiscal year last year.
Yeah, it's an annual thing. So last year when it was September 30th and everybody else was sick and I wasn't, I was doing this like, you know, super awesome high five happy dance. Like, woohoo, I beat it. I'm super healthy. I drank my bone broth. But no, that's not the case. I got it a week later.
But, it does seem to be with my kids. I mean, it seemed generally fairly mild. But it has seemed to kind of hang on for
and I will say I sound a lot worse than I feel. Like I don't have a fever. I do have a mild tummy discomfort situation going on, but it's not. If it is some sort of flu, my body is definitely doing a really good job of fighting it. But this is what happens when you finish a book and have the end of the government fiscal year all in the same 2-week span, and you have school-aged children and they bring home a cold at the same time. Like this
It's like living in a petri dish. On the bright side, I think people will be able to tell which one of us is which on this episode.
There you go.
So it will be really,
and we
really
don't
clear.
Even have to say avocado for you to figure it out.
I may or may not say avocado a few times during the show. I am finding that my Canadian accent is watering down, like, more and more and more.
It's part of what I love about you. I'm going to send you back just to pick up the accent.
I think so. I was back for 3 weeks in the summer, and they all sounded like foreigners to me. It was the weirdest. It was the first time I've experienced that, where I, like, went home, and then I was like, oh, wait, you guys do sound funny. It was the weirdest. I'm sorry, all of our Canadian listeners. I'd never heard the accent before. And then this summer I went, and I was like, oh, no, there's a real accent. And I would find myself, like, still slipping into it. But I think I need to go home either more frequently. Actually, let's just go for more frequently rather than longer trips, because I can't imagine traveling with my kids for more than 3 weeks. That's kind of pushing the boundaries of my sanity already. Yeah, we are talking about, you know, whether or not we should try and start going twice a year now instead of once a year, just because we always find when we go, there's so many people to see and we end up feeling so stretched so thin. I don't know if going twice a year would necessarily fix that, but it's worth a try. So the bright side of your cold is that we have a guest this week, so you won't have to talk very much.
Yeah, I'm super excited because I don't know much about the guest. You book the guest, and so I get to kind of be a listener and do my favorite thing, which is just ask random questions that I want to ask and get them answered. So,
well, and I have to say, this is fairly unusual, because I think this is maybe like the second or third guest that's been like me being like, hey, yeah, we need to have this person on the show. And you being like, say who? Like, maybe this is only the second time that's happened. I don't know. Our devoted listeners, I met another male listener over the weekend, don't let me forget to talk about my weekend, because it was awesome. And I need to thank all of those people in podcast form. But I met another male listener. And so, devoted listeners, feel free to go back into the archives and figure out how many times the guest has been my idea, which is probably not many. Not that I'm like anti the guests we have. I'm just saying Stacey's generally more connected than I am and knows everybody, and everybody likes Stacey, including me. So it's okay.
That's a bit excessive, but thank you. Why don't we bring on our guest, and then you can tell us about your weekend.
We have Magdalena, the thyroid diet coach, is joining us. And Magdalena reached out to me actually a couple of months ago, and I was on her show, and I had so much fun on her show, I thought we should have her on our show. So welcome, Magdalena.
Hey, you guys. Thanks very much.
Would you like to give our listeners the like history of you, the sort of like elevator pitch in a really tall building of who you are and what you do?
Sure, I would love to. I think like a lot of practitioners, and you guys are, you know, part of this, is it really a lot of times is we do what we do because of our own crisis, right? In fact, I haven't really met that many great practitioners who have really great results with people unless we've really gone through it ourselves. And, you know, I'm a good example of somebody who has been diagnosed with Hashimoto's and a lot of other stuff prior to that, and managed to turn my health around. And this is what my passion is today, is to teach women how to, and men, fewer of them, but, you know, but few in between, how to do the same. And so I'm a founder of a coaching practice called Thyroid Diet Coach, which I started 6 years ago. And, you know, and this was a result of obviously having a diagnosis of Hashimoto's in 2008. And we always like to look at our health from the time we got a diagnosis. But really, when I look at things in retrospect, the proverbial 2020 vision, in hindsight, is everything just really started so much earlier than that. You know, to full starters, I was not a breastfed child. You know, I was born in 73. My mother believed that having a formula was a better option than doing her own breastfeeding me. And so already in the first month, I ended up with pneumonia in a hospital, right? Just like that for a month. And, you know, and from that point on, always as a child having severe eczema, having horrible ear infections, sinus problems, ending up in hospitals and having, you know, things literally pulled out of my ears, sucked out of my ears in order to even, so I don't lose hearing. I mean, it was just, it was quite tragic. And, you know, when I think about it today, really, it was as simple as me having a lot of food sensitivities back then. It's just mom obviously didn't know about that. You know, and then it went on to becoming adult acne and horrible PMSs and urinary tract infections and frequent colds. I was probably down with a cold like 4 or 5 times a year, which is, you know, now I'm talking about my health now. I haven't had a cold in 4 years. And so, you know, it's quite magnificent what the body can do. But having gone through all of that, I was diagnosed, I think when in my late 20s, I was diagnosed with hyperthyroidism, which most likely was Graves' disease, which is another form of an autoimmune disease, right, that attacks the thyroid, but then you become hyper. So horrible night sweats, palpitations, getting, you know, just jumping up at the cat meowing, lashing out at just about anyone, losing my mind, really. And I was put on, I lived in a foreign country at that point, so I don't know exactly what he put me on, but I suspect it was a beta blocker of probably metamizone equivalent. And, and it supposedly went away. And then it all came back with a vengeance in 2008 when I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's and having, you know, the symptoms like many of us experience, and that's foggy brain and being up so horribly fatigued, and forgetting things, memory loss, depression, anxiety attacks. And I'll never forget, when I went to see a doctor, she looked at my file, she flipped it onto the other side to look at my age. And she said, "You're 36, of course you're tired." So that was then. And what became very apparent to me was that it was a discovery. It was this very, you know, this one moment in your life where you know is a turning point. And for me, it was seeing an article and finding an article online that talked about how gluten potentially is giving you acne. And I had horrible adult acne. You're talking about just being really covered, you know, in cystic acne, and not just on my face, but my back and my front, and my chest. I mean, it was just absolutely awful. And, you know, especially for a woman, that was a huge thing. Really what happened then was, you know, I got off gluten for a couple of weeks and saw a significant improvement. And from then on, that the journey really started, you know, but back then we didn't have the kind of resources. We didn't have a book like yours, you know, we didn't have all these amazing online resources that people have available now to help themselves. So it was a very slow journey of really discovering what is it that hasn't worked for my for me. And, you know, a big part of my recovery really came from, number one, addressing all my food sensitivities. And that's really about, you know, having a horrible case of leaky gut and IBS and really healing that, and reducing my stress levels. I mean, I used to work in advertising back in the day. And so, you know, I used to joke and say that I'll sleep when I'm dead. And, and number three, really detoxifying my life from emotional garbage as well as just where I lived. I used to live in China, you know, so for 4 years, this is really where I think my health took a huge downturn. And living in China was hard because you can't control what you eat. You can't control what you breathe and drink most of the time. So that was really about letting go of that, all of that toxicity. So that was a big part of my recovery. I am in a point right now where I've managed to reverse my Hashimoto's. My antibodies are down to 40 right now. So I'm still slightly higher than they should. They should be below 30 to be totally negative. I'm totally symptoms free. And I think to me, that's the most important thing. And I wish for anybody to be able to bring down the antibodies from, I was above 6,000 when I was first diagnosed, to get it down to 40 and be symptoms free. So that's, in a nutshell, that's my story, Sarah.
That's amazing. Where did you grow up?
That's a very tricky question. And I tried to make it simple. And I'll just tell you, I'm Polish by birth. My father was a diplomat, so we've always bounced around the world, and I went to numerous different schools, and so I was growing up in Denmark for a while, then I lived in Malaysia for 17 years, then I lived in Hong Kong Shanghai, and then I moved to the US about 5 years ago, and I've lived around the US quite a bit as well. I'm in California right now, and I'm hoping to make this my home and stop all that crazy bouncing around.
Yes. Moving is stressful. It's what the third most stressful thing that you can do, even when you're moving for, you know, really good reasons. So, yeah. I understand the wanting to have firm roots and also love wherever you are. So hopefully you love California and that's why you want to stay.
Yeah, it's the place that I'm at a man. I really, you know, what things are very grounding to be in California for the love of the place and the love of a man. So I think I'm settled.
That sounds like a good mix. So, well, it was your thyroid disease expert that, or your expertise that made me think that doing a thyroid, especially hypothyroidism themed show would be really good, because it's one of the types of questions that I get a lot of questions, because my book is really centered on autoimmune disease, and Hashimoto's thyroiditis is an autoimmune disease, and 90% of hypothyroidism is caused by Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Am I tripping over my words a lot tonight? I apologize, everyone. I don't know what's wrong with my tongue. I will try to
It's my
pull
fault
it
for
together.
Making you talk too much.
I guess that's it. Clearly, I'm over talking, and I should just not talk, and we should just let Magdalena do the show. But I will pull it together and make my mouth start working and communicating properly with my brain. As I was saying, because my work is so focused on autoimmune disease and hypothyroidism is very, very common. Mm-hmm. I get a lot of questions about, you know, specifically, do I need to do anything different for Hashi's? There's, you know, certain symptoms that people find exceptionally frustrating and want advice on. So I grabbed three really representative questions out of our queue, specifically dealing with Hashimoto's, because I always like to take advantage of our guests' expertise, and I thought you would be great to answer those with us.
Sure.
So before we go move on with the show, I just saw an email that says that the Paleo View has been nominated Best Paleo Podcast 14 by Paleo Magazine.
You're not supposed to be checking your email.
I was not. And you did this last year, Stacey.
That's true, in the middle of recording.
In the middle of recording. And therefore, clearly, we record on Paleo Magazine nomination night every year. We can make this statement now for sure, since we've done it 2 years in a row. Have you checked your email?
I did. I hadn't seen an email, but I already saw the list. And both of us have a couple other things on there as well.
Yeah, so I'm also nominated under Best Cookbook Recipe Treat, Best New Paleo Book, Best New Paleo Cookbook, Best Paleo Podcast, and Best Paleo Blog Science Centered, which is by far the most. I think last year I had two nominations, one being the podcast and one being a recipe. So this is like crazy town nominations. So anybody who's listening, please go vote for, well, whoever you want, but obviously I would appreciate if it was a vote for me and for Stacey, but vote for whoever you think actually wins.
I don't know what else I'm nominated for, but I know that I saw the oat meal cookies, which are fruit sweetened. So for them to be nominated in a treat category is really kind of exciting for me, because they're not a chocolate cake.
And I've eaten them. They're good.
Yeah. Thanks.
They're really good. Like, people go make those recipes now, and then you can vote. So the link to go vote, we'll put it in the show notes as well, but it's PaleoM, so it's PaleoM.ag. So the dot's in the weird spot. You wouldn't actually normally think it goes there, but it goes between the M and the A, /PaleoBest14. And if you go there, it will take you to the survey. The only thing you need to do is put in your email address, and they really don't use that email address for anything. It's just to confirm that you're a real person and you're not a robot. And I've never I voted the last 2 years and I've never received an email from PaleoMag. So
it also limits you. So once you put in your email and you vote, that's your vote. Like you can't, you know, come back and do it 18 times 8 days in a row if you're
unless you
a teenage girl obsessed with American Idol or whatever. Like
unless
they figure that out.
18 different email addresses. I mean,
if you really wanted to go that route, especially if you're voting for us, go for it.
We do not endorse any kind of weirdness in voting schemes whatsoever, except that we like the votes. Because I think this year...
Well, even just being nominated, like seeing you're on so many lists, that's crazy, amazing, awesome, and... Like, the community just keeps growing and growing every year. So to still, you know, be on lists and still be recognized as valuable contributors to the community is great. What?
I feel very special.
Yeah.
I am, like, really, really excited about this. This is awesome. I am looking forward to going through. I always actually have fun. Because sometimes it's like it's a toss up, like it's kind of like doing one of those like personality tests where you have to like answer 20 like completely weird questions where like there's like you're looking at two answers and you're like neither, it kind of sometimes or both, and it kind of feels it's kind of got the same pressure to go through and vote as a like Enneagram test, or maybe that's just me. I enjoy voting just to see sometimes. What's cool about it is that you'll sometimes find like other things that you didn't know about. So you'll be like, okay, well, greatest, you know, paleo product that's a sweet treat. And you'll be like, oh yeah, I really like this one. Hey, wait a minute. I've never even heard of this one. I'm going to go check them out. So it's kind of a neat way of, you know, just kind of seeing what's out there and seeing what
there's
like.
A couple of blogs listed that I hadn't heard of. And I'm like, I'm going to need to get on that. anyway. Yeah.
So anyway, I am doing the job that you did last year of woot woot.
Tooting our giant horns.
I'm just, I may or may not be kind of doing a cheesy 80s girl white dance, white girl dance. Might just be, I look really.
That's okay. I wrote a post. Okay. I wrote a post on Sunday that used the term jazzy hands. So we're
jazzy
good.
Hands? Mm-hmm. Sweet.
I said, I'm super jazzy hands excited about our book coming out.
That may or may not be the best sentence ever.
I legitimately am super jazzy hands excited about our book coming out.
Did you just do jazzy hands when you said that?
Maybe.
I could hear you do the jazzy hands as you said that sentence. It's like, yeah. Can you hear me doing it right now? I'm doing it right now.
Well, you're always a hand talker, so it sounds about the same.
Yeah, that is true.
So we didn't really recap our weekends. I just want to tell you that I got to like blog because I wanted to blog this weekend, and it was so exciting. We put up a post that I was like super exciting and proud of last Thursday. Did you see our tutorial Thursday with apples?
No, I've been living in a tunnel.
Okay, we've got to check out Tutorial Thursday because it's a new series that we're doing and it's really super exciting and you're going to love it. And we're doing another one this Thursday. And then we also put up a new content post on Sunday, which featured our no potato baked potato soup, which was from the steak restaurant dinner menu in Real Life Paleo. I think you remember that photo because you told me you liked it, but I put
I
up that.
Do, and I did see you like trying to get people to vote for which recipe they wanted. And that was the one that
I was shocked. Like, I'm like so proud of everybody that they wanted soup because I never would have guessed that they would have wanted soup, but they did. And so we put that recipe up. And then this week on the blog, we have a breakfast cake going up tomorrow that we made this weekend. And because when I'm sick, I want bready foods. I don't know what my deal is, but I try to make more nourishing versions, but it's just what my body, I think, is comforted by, like growing up eating English muffins or whatever. I don't know. And then we also have our Tutorial Thursday on spaghetti squash, which is even more epic than our first Tutorial Thursday, which is on apples. So everybody needs to get on the blog and get excited about us doing new content. We're thrilled to kind of have that time and desire to do it because we're not doing 18 million other projects, and inspired, and the kids are excited, and the kids have ideas, and the kids want to participate, which when we're working on a book and we do 12 to 15 recipes a day, we do not have the opportunity to invite the children into the kitchen to help us because it's way too crazy. So that is how I spent my weekend. And then, you know, because I wasn't feeling well on Sunday, I just sat around and blogged. Yeah.
That sounds really nice. I'm still trying to figure out how to carve out time for the things I wanted to.
I know. I got to get better because we get to tour again soon. Like, I want to be healthy and be ready to tour the country with you in, like, weeks.
Yeah. It's really super coming up. I really got to get on that TSA pre-check thing.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of flying and a lot of waiting in line to go through security.
A lot of shoes taking off that don't need to be.
Right. And what if my feet get stinky on day 5?
Okay.
I want to congratulate you for what you said, like all the amazing achievements that you've been having, because I think most people don't realize until you enter this world, like, what is the level of commitment and hard work that goes into producing shows and creating blog posts and developing recipes. I think it's only when you're on this site that's when you really comprehend the, I think the work that goes into that, but also the discipline and the consistency that you're going to have to continue doing things to really be successful at it. And you guys have been awesome at that. So I want to just say this because I think as listeners, you know, like when you are just on the receiving side, is I think many people don't realize how what goes into that. You got to be special.
Aw, thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I know that was a really good choice to have you on the show. We could just end it right there. And scene. Well, I was not lying around blogging this weekend because I gave a seminar in Biglerville, Pennsylvania. So I flew into Baltimore Friday night and then discovered that renting a car at the Baltimore airport is kind of a pain in the behind. So I didn't get to my hotel room until extremely late, which was sad for me because I like sleep. But then I drove with Angie Alt came with me for the day, and we got to just like hang out. It was about an hour and a half drive out to Biglerville from Baltimore, and it just made the drive like so much fun. I so enjoyed hanging out with her. And for anybody who doesn't know Angie, she blogs at Alternative Autoimmune, and she's an autoimmune blogger. She has a truly inspiring story, and I happen to know that everyone's going to get lots and lots of details about her amazing, inspiring story when she comes out with her first book in December, and I will definitely be plugging that book more as it comes out, but I got a sneak peek, and it is gorgeous and absolutely inspirational and something completely different in the autoimmune literature, and I think people are going to just adore it. So it's not available for pre-order, so this is just for you guys to have a heads up and just know that it's coming, and I'll let you know when it's available. But then we went to the Adams and Franklin County Weston A. Price Foundation chapter fall gathering, and it was at Euler Organic Farms in Biglerville, which was such a beautiful farm, and they just had, it was like this completely amazing, picturesque countryside with like cattle roaming and turkeys. Like there was like a hill of turkeys, and it was like absolutely beautiful to see all this, these like turkeys just hanging out on this hill. And they were amazing hosts. And so I got to hear Maureen Diaz give a talk. She's the chapter leader, and you know, hang out, meet some vendors. And then I gave a seminar that was supposed to be 3 hours, but because we were all having so much fun and there were lots of good questions, we ended up stretching it to 4.5. So I was tired at the end, surprise, surprise. But then Angie and I drove back to the Baltimore area, and I got to have supper with her family, which was really nice. Angie's an amazing cook. And then went back to my hotel room for sleep and flew out Sunday morning. I said it's yesterday for me, but of course, like a week ago by the time this airs. And I was home early enough to take my oldest daughter to a birthday party. So that was good. But I am not sick, but I am feeling pretty run down from all the travel. I think I would enjoy traveling a lot more without the actual traveling part. Like if I could just be somewhere cool and like meet people and do seminars and stuff and then just be home, I think that would be like perfect. A little bit Star Trek-y, I realize, and not within the realm of the laws of physics, but one can always dream. And if you're listening to this podcast and you live in the Denver area, I will be in Denver Saturday, October 11th, doing a book signing at a Barnes & Noble, and I can't remember which one. So go to my events page. It's thepaleomom.com/events, and there will be a link, and then you can figure out exactly which Barnes & Noble it is in Denver, and come out and meet me. I'll be doing my stereotypical start with a short talk and then question and answers and then signing books. And I've never been to Denver before, so I'm really looking forward to seeing the city and meeting everyone. And now I'm done talking.
No, you're not, because you have to do some science.
Right, the science. Okay, let's do some science.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science. So the number one question that I get asked about the paleo autoimmune protocol for people with thyroid diseases is whether or not they can eat cruciferous vegetables. So that's vegetables of the cabbage family, and that includes cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, radishes, turnips, arugula, watercress, kohlrabi. And the reason why I get asked this question is because this family of vegetables and a few others on the side have been labeled as goitrogens. So they've been labeled as having the ability to cause goiters in the thyroid gland and that therefore being contraindicated for people with thyroid disease. And when I was writing the Paleo Approach, because everything that I had read had really emphasized the extreme importance in eating vegetables and just how fundamental the nutrients from a large amount of vegetable matter is for the health of the immune system. Clearly, meat and seafood is also extremely important. But really, when I'm trying to explain how someone puts together their plate, I really emphasize sort of 50-50 animal foods and plant foods, but 50-50 in terms of calories. So you're getting protein and fat from animal foods, and you're getting carbohydrates and fat from plant foods. But when you're looking at your plate, you know, your plate is going to be dominated by vegetables when you're achieving that ratio, especially once you've got non-starchy vegetables on it. And in that regards, you know, my recommendations are extremely similar to Dr. Terry Walls, who recommends, you know, 9 cups of vegetables a day. So basically 3 full dinner plates with 3 plates of 3 cups each of vegetables every day for getting the nutrients that, you know, in her case, she's really focused on mitochondrial health. And in my case, I'm really focused on immune health. Turns out it's really the same nutrients. So the same nutrients that the mitochondria need to be healthy are the same nutrients generally that the immune system needs to be healthy. And so if I'm going to recommend, you know, all of these huge vegetable consumption, and given the popularity and the fact that cruciferous vegetables are, well, they're extremely nutrient dense. When you look at kale, which is a cruciferous vegetable, and it's kale and collards are probably some of the two most nutrient dense vegetables, excluding wild vegetables, available. And they're common, they're inexpensive, they're easy, they're things that we're really familiar with. So if you have thyroid disease and you've been told, well, you can't eat cruciferous vegetables, it's really important to understand that the only situation in which these vegetables have been shown to have goitrogenic properties is in the case of severe iodine deficiency. So what that means is if you are iodine deficient, then there is a legitimate reason to be wary of these vegetables, especially raw. So when you cook them, the goitrogenic properties are greatly diminished. So so if you do know that you have diagnosed iodine deficiency, reducing or just making sure that you're cooking these vegetables is really important. But in every other situation, these vegetables actually support thyroid health and may actually stimulate the thyroid in a beneficial way. So so what do you do? What do you do if you're iodine deficient? So the best thing to do is, I mean, to get tested, tested for iodine deficiency. And if you are iodine deficient, you know, I'm a big fan of food sources of nutrients whenever ever possible. So your best food sources of iodine are plant sea vegetables. Sea vegetables, seafood of all kinds, fish, shellfish, they're all natural sources of iodine. What's great about them is they all contain a wealth of other minerals and vitamins that are necessary for thyroid health. And so it becomes something that you then you're working on these other great nutrient dense foods that are also part of the Paleo Autoimmune Protocol. They're also part of Terry Wall's Wall's protocol. And it's like it's win-win because you're eating these great nutrient dense foods to get your iodine as well as eating more cruciferous vegetables. Now, the next question I get asked is about iodine excess. So what happens in thyroid disease is you tend to get the two extremes with iodine. So you get iodine deficiency and iodine excess. Iodine excess that's happening with thyroid diseases is typically directly related to deficiency in selenium because it's a selenoprotein that actually processes the excess iodine. So it turns out that selenium is phenomenally important for thyroid health. And so when you're focusing on nutrients for thyroid health, getting sufficient iodine, getting sufficient selenium are really, really important. Zinc and iron are also extremely important. And so, you know, other than correcting an iodine deficiency, if you are looking to follow the autoimmune protocol and you have a thyroid disease, there is no reason to avoid these foods. And if these foods make you feel bad, like they make you feel like you're having more symptoms of low thyroidism, that is a big red flag that your iodine's off and it's time to get tested and or time to start really focusing on food sources of iodine like seaweeds, like shellfish, and like fish from the ocean. So that is my whole answer.
My favorite is the sea vegetable, sea salt. I find it to be delicious and wonderful on like eggs and soup. I mean, I know if you're AIP and not eating eggs, that won't be good for you, but I feel good when I have that.
And actually any unrefined sea salt will have iodine. So you don't have to go to like iodized table salt. So if you're getting Celtic sea salt or Himalayan pink salt, those have iodine in them. And what's great about them is they also have tons of other trace minerals. Like I saw one report about Himalayan pink salt that said it had 84 different trace minerals in it. And that is phenomenally helpful for the immune system. But seaweed also is like crazy rich in minerals. So I don't know if it's exactly 84. It might even be more than that. So sea vegetables, sea salt, sea vegetables, yeah. Nori, sea snacks, wakami, arami, they're all like really awesome. I like to put them in soups. So I like to chop up seaweeds. Wakami especially is really, really good in soups.
I find a lot of people are very new to seaweed, you know, and seafood, sea vegetables, just because it is a bit of an acquired taste. And so one of the things I found to be really helpful is to get people to put kelp, just buying kelp, and then putting that into when you're making bone broth and keep the guy going there until throughout, as long as you're making your bone broth. So whether it's, I like my bone broth to be going for like 48 hours at least. And that's great, because then you take it out and you can't really taste it very much. It, in fact, it just gives a little bit of that, what the Japanese call it, umami, does that additional taste to it, flavor, which is one of the big tricks. It's like using MSG, right? But without using MSG, and it gives that additional flavor and depth to that broth. So that's one easy way of getting it in as well.
I love that tip. And I've got kombu sheets, which are used for traditional Japanese dashi broths. They usually use kombu, seaweed, and bonito. And I just feel like it'd be so easy to just grab a kombu sheet and throw it into my next batch of broth. I'm so going to do that.
Yeah. Awesome.
So let's do some questions.
Questions and answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Kendra, who has hyperthyroidism and is having trouble losing weight. And Kendra writes, I try to stick to a paleo diet as best I can. Work out with a personal trainer 3 times a week, do kickboxing classes, and have a rowing machine at home. I cannot lose this weight. It doesn't budge. I read an article about leptin levels and leptin resistance causing this. I don't know what to do about these test results. I don't have any insurance, but do have an endo I am going to send these results to. Any advice? This is beyond frustrating. Magdalena, do you want to take a first stab?
Yeah, sure, I will. You know, so one of the this is obviously very, very frustrating, especially when you're really committed to changing your diet and you're committed to working out 3 times a week. Is quite a commitment, right? With a personal trainer, so you're spending the money, you're showing up, and yet you're not losing weight. So it's so understandable to be feeling this way. You know, I think the first thing I'm just gonna say is that first of all, you know, really addressing, looking at your autoimmune component of your thyroid health. Where are you with your antibodies right now, and how aggressive is the attack? So I'm assuming here you might be having Hashimoto's, because it really is the most common reason why we have hypothyroidism going on, right? So I'll be curious to know from Kendra, what are her antibodies? If she's tested for Hashimoto's, how high are they? And really working on getting those down low as possible, because once the attack of on the thyroid slows down or completely stops, that's when your thyroid has a chance to revive itself or get to a good place where you're able to, you know, remembering that thyroid is your metabolic pedal, right? So that's what's going to help you converting fat into energy. And so really looking at that element first. And it's great that you're following paleo. I will dig a little bit deeper into your digestive health, because really that's most people with Hashimoto's have digestive issues going on. And look a little bit deeper into is there anything else that you're currently eating that's maybe not really beneficial? Like, for example, look into FODMAPs. That's one of the things I've discovered with a lot of people with Hashimoto's. FODMAPs is FODMAPS. Foods that are seemingly great, like avocados or cabbage or, you know, apples and peaches are wonderful, but they're also very high in specific type of sugars, which can be detrimental to our health. And so looking into those and to really make sure your digestion is in a really, really good place. You know, the other thing I just want to add on to this is that looking into other things than the thyroid that could be potentially sabotaging your inability to losing weight, and specifically other hormonal imbalances. So you mentioned here leptin. I will look into, you know, your sugar levels and see where those are. But also something that's so common I see with a lot of people, and I feel like there's a lot of intent and intensity potentially in Kendra's life. And so look at your cortisol levels and your adrenals, because that is one of the most common reasons why we can't lose weight apart from the thyroid, is having too high or too low of cortisol levels. So basically adrenal exhaustion at, you know, level 2, level 3. And that could be something that inhibits your ability of losing weight. And until and unless you actually relax and slow down the workouts and get enough sleep, that's really going to be the prerequisite to losing weight. And I think the third, you know, just one more hormonal imbalance that I think is worthwhile to look at besides the thyroid is also estrogen dominance, and see how are you faring with your estrogen levels. So those are the things that I would look at.
Well, that was a really thorough answer. Stacey, do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, we covered leptin in depth last episode, so I've got nothing else.
Yeah, so I think the only thing that I want to mention is that all of the systems that Magdalena just mentioned are all interlinked. So there's feedback between the thyroid and the adrenal glands and the production of cortisol, and there's feedback between the thyroid and the ovaries and the production of estrogen and progesterone. And so having one thing out of balance can actually send the other things out of balance. So for example, if you're really stressed and your adrenal glands are either, you know, overworked or they're, you know, exhausted and they've basically given up even trying to produce enough cortisol, that has a direct impact on how the thyroid is functioning, and that has a direct impact on sex hormones. And all of those things feed into metabolism and how easy it is for your body to access fat stores and use stored fat for energy. So, and then the same thing is true if your thyroid, if your dose of thyroid replacement hormone is not adequately dialed in, that can be causing, you know, basically all of these symptoms, and it can be causing a stress, you know, it's signaling as a stress to the adrenal glands, and it can also be signaling to the ovaries to stop making sufficient estrogen and progesterone. So you've kind of got this, you've got these three systems that are all so interlinked that one thing not being right is going to affect the other ones. So why you're not losing weight is kind of a little bit of all of them together, but figuring out what thing is the root cause, whether it's unmanaged stress, you're not getting enough sleep, your digestion's not great, so it's a nutrient deficiency, or if it's, you know, something like, you know, required tweaks to your diet to stop your immune system attacking your thyroid, or it may be as simple as, you know, switching your dose of Armour. So you're, you know, getting retested and tinkering with that dose and seeing if maybe it's just a little bit too low while you're doing everything else to look after thyroid and adrenal health.
You know, I have this really great resource. I compiled a whole list of different directories for doctors who are integrative in approach. So, you know, I think it's just really brilliant that the point you brought up about the right dosing of thyroid medication, and so many people are underdosed, right, especially on AMA. But the challenge is to really work with a practitioner who understands this, and that can be a big challenge in itself, right? So I just want to offer I put a whole list of directories where you can find doctors based on your zip code. And there's also listings for outside of the United States. I think it's Australia, UK. So if you go to thyroiddietcoach.com, under blog posts, there is an articles. There is one saying the title is how do I find a doctor to support me? So there's about 10 different resources you can go to and find somebody who can really help you through this. Cause that's really going to be, it's going to make your healing really much easier while you're focusing on figuring out diet. I still think that the whole objective is to, for many people, it's totally possible to lower their medication and really looking at thyroid replacement, you know, as a sort of, with a vision of lowering the medication as much as possible. Unless, of course, somebody had the thyroid removed because of cancer or radiation, that's a different story. But for many people, it's totally possible to reduce the medications. But having a dose properly initially, that's just so huge. And, you know, it's really great that you mentioned this, Sarah, because so many women are so underdosed that they end up really having, like, no energy to cook and no energy to get off sofa and, you know, and getting things done. But at the same time, we push ourselves even more going, like, I've got to do this. I've got to get up. I've got to cook for myself. And that creates this incredible sense of anxiety, because on one hand, you're completely pooped out, and it's not because you're lazy, but it's because it's your hormones that are completely not collaborating. But on the other hand, like, you really want, you have this desire in you when wanting to improve things. So really getting on the right medication could be a really great starting point of really developing a wonderful self-nurturing routine around your life to get you better.
Awesome. Yeah, I actually, and I see the other side of it, where it's not just that necessarily people are under-medicated, but there's such a desire when people are tackling the autoimmune protocol and they're, you know, they're going to bed early and they're learning how to meditate and they're doing all of these things to regulate the immune system and reverse their autoimmune disease. And there's such a desire to get off medications that people will start taking a lower dose. They'll start trying to wean themselves off their hormone replacement before they're ready to. And that really needs to be done with, like, frequent testing and a medical professional. So, like, I understand that, you know, that desire to be medication free, and that especially when you're putting in all of that effort into regulating the immune system so that you can reverse your disease. And it's important for people to know that depending on how long you've had your autoimmune disease, depending on how much permanent damage there is, how much scar tissue there is, like, you may not ever be able to get off hormone replacement. You may be able to dramatically reduce your dose, and some people will be able to go off of it. But if there's permanent damage to the thyroid and it just doesn't have the capabilities of making adequate thyroid hormone anymore, you know, it's, you know, frustrating because we have all of these, like, what if moments. But at the same time, like, how awesome is it that we have this amazing combination of conventional medicine that offers us thyroid replacement hormones so that we can feel normal? And then we also have this great, you know, alternative or complementary approach with diet and lifestyle to, you know, get everything back on track so that we don't end up continuously, you know, just destroying our thyroid and needing more and more thyroid hormone over the years.
Yeah.
So we have time for one more question. And this question is from Annie, who has hyperthyroidism, and her really annoying complaint is chronic constipation. And
that
so,
seems more than annoying to me.
What? Yeah,
I've been constipated a couple of times in my life for very short periods of time, and it's been way worse than annoying. I can't imagine it being a chronic problem.
And I think
problem.
The reason why Annie sent this question to the queue is because I've been fairly open about my own personal history with chronic constipation, although mine was not caused by low thyroid. I totally, totally understand where she's coming from and understand the need for an immediate solution. So Annie writes, my immediate need is to know what to eat or take as a bulking agent. I know my body very well in regards to this, and since starting the autoimmune protocol 10 days ago, we're in need of great help. I know all the high fiber fruits and vegetables, soluble and non-soluble. I really want to give this a go to help all of my stomach issues as well as my general health, but are making them worse despite my efforts and attempts at being vigilant. So in particular, it sounds like eating more fruits and vegetables is not necessarily helping, although I don't know exactly how much she's eating.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got a couple of points here for Annie. So let me pull out mine and see what you guys have got to add on to that. You know, one of the big things that I see with constipation, this is like beyond vegetables, beyond all the water and fiber. I think we all know, and you've got a very educated community, so I think people are very aware of those points. But one of the things that I find in my practice is that having food intolerances, food sensitivities, really can be a big contributor towards constipation. And Annie also mentioned in her email that she's got mild psoriasis, which oftentimes I see that with people who are eating dairy. So now that she's doing paleo, I'm assuming she's doing paleo for autoimmunity, so that cuts out dairy. You know, so hopefully that's going to help you, and psoriasis should clear out as well. And a lot of times dairy will be a contributing factor to constipation and skin issues. So definitely look into that, but also looking into more food sensitivities. You know, one of the psoriasis thing is an interesting one, because people, for example, with histamine intolerance, So, you know, surprise, surprise here, things like even sauerkraut and lemons and, you know, wonderful food like that, right, can be, is in high in histamine. So anything fermented, really, and all the citrus fruit can be contributing towards high histamine. And so if your body is not processing foods high in histamine properly, that can be causing the psoriasis, which can contribute in many ways to chronic constipation because of the food sensitivity that you are having. You know, the other thing that a lot of times to see with people is really the lack of probiotics. So having a balanced out flora, gut flora. And you said you've only started doing this 10 days ago. So that's really, really recent. And it's pretty normal to be constipated when we change our diets. So I would suggest to give a little bit more time and love and care to your body and just be gentle on yourself. You know, and so, and Sarah's, I mean, in the program here, I mean, you guys talk so much about probiotics. I'm not going to spend time on talking about that, whether it's through supplements or through food. You know, but on a little bit on the external side, one of the things that people find very nurturing and sort of, especially in the times of transitions, is to do castor oil packs, you know. So it's literally you take castor oil, you apply it on your tummy, and especially where your large intestine is. And if you don't know where it is, then just Google it and you will see a map that shows you it goes around your abdomen. And applying castor oil there and putting a hot pack over it, you know, it's just castor oil just relaxes us. It's wonderful for liver detoxification to apply it around your liver. If you apply it on your large intestine, it's going to help you just relax the muscles, and it gets a lot of times people to move the bowels. It's a little bit of a temporary solution, but you are entering a phase of transition, a big transition if you're going paleo right now. So I would definitely recommend that. And maybe one more thing, you know, I also find that a lot of people struggle with constipation because of being magnesium deficient. So, you know, you can look at foods that are high in magnesium, but to also support your body externally, you know, one of my favorite things to do is to apply magnesium oil, and specifically it's called magnesium chloride, and it's something you spray on your abdomen. It can be under your, so somewhere close to your lymphatic nodes, so like around your neck, under your armpits, inner part of your thighs. And, you know, and if you find that a little bit too stingy, then you can combine it with some sesame oil or coconut oil and rub it in. And it's a wonderful way of getting magnesium in, which most people are so severely deficient of anyway. And that's, again, it's a great way of just bypassing, instead of doing yet another supplement for magnesium. You know, I always try to give people other alternatives of getting minerals vitamins into their body, not just through digestion. It's obviously one way, but supplements is something that can really have such a detrimental impact on our digestion furthermore. So, and most people are popping too many supplements anyway. So magnesium oil is just a wonderful way of getting the magnesium in through your skin rather than through your digestion. So with that, hopefully your bowels start moving. What about you guys? Do you have any points from you?
I know Sarah's going to have a lot to say, so before she executes the rest of this, the one thing that occurred to me when I saw this, too, is we've recently talked about the idea of slowly changing carbohydrate intake rather than kind of doing a complete upheaval in one day, and how that would affect your system. From your hormones to your digestive tract. So at this point, for this person, it's probably non-relevant, but I would say to people who are planning on making the transition to paleo or to AIP or any sort of change diet in the future, if I were going to do it over again, I would definitely look at how many carbohydrates as well as calories overall that I was averaging. For me in particular, I have to be careful with fat and carbohydrate ratio because I don't have a gallbladder. And I would kind of slowly wean that number down over time, you know, like 5 grams of carbs a day or something as a target so that my body wouldn't notice that at the end of 2 or 3 weeks I was, you know, eating 100 less grams of carbohydrate or whatever the case may be. This is really the only, because I know, Sarah, you're going to touch on a bunch of stuff, but I thought maybe that would be the only thing that I could add to the conversation.
That's awesome. So I think, because I know that, Stacey, your voice is not going to last much longer, and we already talked about how we're run down and need to go to bed at a good time. There's only two things that I'm going to add. And then I'm going to point people to, I have a post on my site that Monica put the link in the show notes, but it's, you know, basically how to treat constipation on the paleo diet, because it is something that often people experience through transition. And it has a bunch of different things in it, but I do find magnesium supplements to be very, very helpful. I take a magnesium glycinate supplement and have since the very beginning of my paleo journey. But I also have had chronic constipation since I was 3 or 4 years old and had been on some form of laxative and or stool softener for 12 years before going paleo. And so I don't take any laxatives or stool softeners now, but I do take a magnesium glycinate supplement every evening before bed. It also helps me sleep, so I like it extra that way. And then the other recommendation is to get something like a Squatty Potty or a Step and Go stool. There are two different brands of the same concept, which is a stool that kind of, you know, is conformed to your toilet, but you rest your feet on it when you're going to the bathroom and it corrects your position. So instead of being in a seated position as though you were sitting at a table, which is not a natural defecation position. And yes, I did just use the word defecation in the podcast.
It is a constipation question.
This is true.
We haven't really talked much about poo for a constipation question.
This is true. We should amp up the poo talk. So what it does is it raises up your legs. So you're in a natural squatting position without actually having to go to the work of squatting, although you can. So both the Squatty Potty and the Step and Go, and I have actually both in my home, and they're both wonderful. They're both sturdy enough that you can actually squat on them if you want to go that route. But what they do is they correct the geometry, and they both sites have really great little diagrams about basically if you're sitting normally on a toilet without a stool under your feet, you're basically pooing around a corner. So you're creating a kink in your lower rectum, and that's causing you to work a lot harder to push the poo out. There we go. And as soon as you raise your legs and you get into a natural squatting position, it actually corrects the geometry. So it's a straight line, and all of a sudden gravity is actually working for you and it's much less work. And actually this is something that I would recommend as a, you know, paleo friendly biohack just for general health for anyone. But especially for the extreme. So it can be good for chronic constipation. It can also be good for diarrhea. It just really changes the strain involved in going to the bathroom, and it can make a profound difference for people. So that would be the other like major thing, would be to get a poop stool.
You know, I'm smiling as I'm listening to you talk about this because
I said defecate and poop in the same answer.
No, actually,
and rectum.
That's Stacey's gonna laugh on that one. But for me, I was just smiling because, you know, in Asia where I grew up, I spent 17 years of my life in Malaysia, and you have two types of toilets, right? You have the squats and then you have the sit down. They call it the Western toilet. And, you know, I grew up there I lived there since I was 15 years old. So those are very formative years. And I would always go and use the squat toilet just because it always felt so much easier. And, you know, and so many of my colleagues and friends would tease me going like, "You're white. Why didn't you use the Western toilet?" Which is so ridiculous, you know. So I'm like, because it's easier. It feels better. You know, I didn't know about any of the stuff you're talking about today, right? But it was just such a natural choice, you know, just to go with that. And I always felt so much emptier. So, yeah, get your poop still. Still poop. No. P- poop stool.
Yes. Poop stool. Yeah. I like to think of it as the move gnat of pooping. You know, move gnat.
Another good piece.
Just to end on a really super dorky joke.
Yeah, super dorky. So beyond your blog post about poop for people wanting to find more information about poop and what's normal, because we've used a bunch of terminology here, and if you are like me and you stand up after you've used the restroom and stare back into the toilet bowl just wondering what you got going on there and making sure everything's in check, but if you for whatever reason don't know what you're looking at and you want to make sure that it is in check, Practical Paleo has a special poo page where you can look at pictures, cartoon pictures of poo to see if yours is in line or not. But we also use a squatty potty, so I endorse your encouragement of that idea as well.
Awesome.
When I travel, I always forget about how much I love it, and I'm like,
I know. Oh! I end up, okay, so this is what I do when I travel.
Suitcase I find.
Oh, well, I was going to say garbage can turned down. There's got to be something. I want to challenge both Squatty Potty and Step and Go to come up with a travel version, because I would buy it.
It's pretty intense.
And I know many other people who want some kind of folding travel poop stool. I don't know if either Squatty Potty or Step and Go actually listen to this podcast, but it is my challenge to them to come up with a travel poop stool for those of us who spend lots of time on the road.
Well, at the very least, we'll have a link in the show notes if you want to check out the product that we're talking about. And I want to appreciate everyone for suffering through my voice this week. I hope to not be talking like I was a lifelong smoker next week. it doesn't feel very good. And thank you for your patience, ladies.
Okay, I just have to end on one more note. The hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian is nominated as Best Hashtag for PaleoMag Best of 2014.
And Bone Broth Heels. I own both of those hashtags. I own them. That's such a, like, wrong use of the term. I use them all the time, and I'm pretty sure I invented them. So I'm super excited that people like them and that they're popular. And I am a hashtag geek, so I did get totally geeked when I saw two of my hashtags on the very short list.
That is awesome. I clearly need to use more hashtags.
Coffee with Ben. I don't even know if people know who Ben is.
People Ben. Know who Ben is.
Coffee well, now I think because the hashtag, but when the hashtag came out and we, all of us bloggers are doing Coffee with Ben, I remember a bazillion people asking me, who's Ben? And so now, you know, now, like a year and a half later, I think people know who it is, but it's funny to see that there. So cool. Yeah, don't forget to go vote for us, especially the Paleo View, because if you're listening, then you probably like it. So, and while you're on the computer telling people how much you love us, maybe pop over in iTunes and leave a review there. If you haven't already, that would be great. I don't know why I'm talking like this.
Because it's the end of the podcast. And we're just going to make this a new thing that we do every podcast.
And now we have four listeners. All right.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Magdalena, for joining us. This was really awesome.
Thank you.
Do you want to
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry
quickly?
I wasn't very fun today.
You were fun in your amusingness of the frogginess. Magdalena, do you want to remind people where they can find you?
The name of my practice is Thyroid Diet Coach, and so the website is thyroiddietcoach.com, and that's where you can find me.
Awesome. Thanks so much, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
There's a frog on the phone with us now.
Hi.
Hi there. Hi, Stacey. How are you feeling?
I'm going to do really minimal stuff on this podcast, like say hello. I invariably always get sick this time of year. I mean, I used to get sick like all the time. Mm-hmm. And I have a very, very, very busy September. at work. So usually, like, sometime between September 28th and October 3rd, I get sick. And the kids all got it last week, and I didn't get sick. And I did, like, a little happy dance this weekend where I was like, ha-ha, you guys all get sick, and I took care of myself, and I didn't. And then I got sick.
And then you made me check my email and then see how I'm just going to not look at these. Not going to look at them. If I ignore it, it'll go away, right? So, are you ready, Frogsy? Can I call you Frogsy?